The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
And good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first edition of Saturday Afternoon for 2014. It is January 4th. For this first interview program in the new year, I'm pleased to start off with a man who always seems to be in the lead, Andrew Anglin, web publisher of the highly successful The Daily Stormer website, at dailystormer.com. Welcome to the program, Andre.
Thank you, Carolyn.
All right. Well, I think it's very fitting that I start the new year out with you because we've just, you know, there's been, it's not the first time, but there's been news and talk about the ratings of the Daily Stormer. And you're more familiar with that than I am. So would you please, if you don't mind bragging a little bit, would you please, give the, story about your ratings and when you started the Daily Stormer and how popular it's become?
Well, I don't want to brag too much, but I started on July 4th of 2013. So today is actually the 6 month anniversary. And I don't know, my Alexa ranking, I think is about 57 or 56,000, which is pretty good.
It's very good.
Well, somebody just published a blog and put me at number 5 of, put us, I'm not the only one working on the site, but put us at number 5 on the, top 35 pro white websites and put us at number 5 based on Alexa rankings. So yeah, I feel good about it. I think it, you know, more than reflecting on me, it reflects on a message that people want to hear, that, you know, a lot of people would rather come up with their own message and try and do something, you know, to distinguish themselves rather than just sticking to the important stuff and hitting it over and over again, as I've been trying to do.
Right. Well, it's working. Do you have any ideas about the demographics of who is going to this website? Because it's not just for pro white ranking, which this particular person, Russell James, did. And he picked out what he thought, you know, were. He left some things out. A lot of people were talking about what they thought should have been included. But, you know, it's one person's kind of image of it. But even without that, in general, world rankings, you're 56,000, which is really, really good because, you know, it's competing with all these establishment websites, news websites, CBS, ABC, and tons of all these really big establishment places, plus sites like David Duke and people like that who've been around for a long time and have quite a bit of traffic. So it's really an accomplishment. And so you have to be reaching a lot of people besides people who are interested in pro-white issues, right?
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, and hopefully getting people interested. The original idea was to do something like what Alex Jones does, and I think I've succeeded in that, and I think I'm drawing a lot of people from that crowd, as well as just, you know, normal people who are Googling around looking for information about what's happening in our society. I think a lot of people are finding the site. I get a lot of emails from people who have found the site and have followed links and looked into the information and feel like it's been a really important part of their personal awakening. So yeah, it feels good.
Okay. Well, how do you expect to keep up with it? I mean, it's, I don't know how many hours you spend on it.
A lot.
yeah, because you have some help there, but you don't really have like a staff. And I don't think you're paying anybody yet, right?
No, I'm not paying anybody. That would require some kind of an income for me. I mean, I'm getting donations, but I had to upgrade the server. You know, that's costing over $200 now with all the security stuff. And then, so yeah, it's not able to pay anybody yet. I don't know if I will get to that point. I probably need to figure out a way to make a living out of it. But we'll see. I think it'll all work out.
Yeah. Do you have plans to expand? Like you said, you thought you were had matched Alex Jones, but he also has television and radio shows and makes videos and all that stuff. So, which I don't know is all that necessary. But are you looking at anything like that for the future? Or do you think that what you've got here is enough and you really want to do other things besides this? I'm trying to ask you if you are able to answer, you know, what kind of ideas you have, you know, moving around in your mind.
Yeah, I would definitely like to continue to expand what I'm doing into as many mediums as I can. With the radio, I don't think I can do what Alex Jones does personally. I think you pretty much have to be on drugs to act like that. But I don't think I could handle the radio. I would be interested in doing some radio or putting together a radio network, I guess. I haven't thought too much about that so far. Me and Clement were talking about doing a 1 hour thing once a week or something and getting some stuff like that put together, maybe with some other people who work on the site, some other people who write blogs and that type of thing. The audio video stuff I think is very important because it just reaches so much of a broader audience. You know,
it can be done through other means. It doesn't have to be done on Daily Stormer, but I mean, that's certainly probably would do, be very appealing if it was.
Well, yeah, I guess I would be interested in writing and producing, you know, videos, educational videos for YouTube. I have one guy I've been talking to about it, and I just haven't. I mean, right now what I'm doing I think is important, and it's also very time consuming. So until I get to the point where I'm getting enough help on the site where I can start looking at other things, I'm just going to keep focusing on this.
Well, you know, like I am very happy that you haven't turned to advertising, and I don't like the sites with all the advertising. They all say they need all this money, you know, so they take out these ads. Plus they ask for all kinds of donations. Now you're not comfortable asking for donations. I can tell that, you know, I'm not either, but you're even less comfortable.
I do ask.
You are asking now, right? Because you have to. When you have expenses, you have to. But for a site that's as popular as yours, have more people started contributing, or is that really been kind of a disappointment?
Well, no, it's not a disappointment. Anytime anybody contributes, I feel very good about it, no matter how much money it is. So, I mean, it means a lot. Just a gesture. But, you know, a couple of people have given more than others. And November was a very good month, December less so. But, you know, I think it'll work out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to have a need for money to come. So you kind of have to go on out on doing something and then, you know, then ask and then it will usually come. But I don't want to get hung up on money here. It's just that, just what, you know, what kind of plans for expansion you might have. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention was that I was surprised to see that Total Fascism still has so much traffic since you haven't been adding anything to it for a couple of, probably it seems like a couple of months almost. You've been totally devoted to Stormer. So, and yet, so that was another big success story you had, and it's still going. You can comment on that. Plus, you know, what do you think is the secret of your particular success, in putting together these sites and writing?
Yeah, I'm very happy that Total Fascism still gets a lot of hits and a lot of people going through and reading my stuff that I spent, I guess about a year before I started Daily Stormer writing. I think it's important stuff that speaks to people who are interested in more complex type ideas. So I think that was the reason for that success, is that I was analyzing things in a, I don't know if you would say an intellectual manner, but in a pretty deep analysis of the various issues we're dealing with, as well as some historical issues to deal with Hitler and the Third Reich. And I think that spoke to people, and I spent a lot of time trying to go through and correct the, you know, what this, like the stuff that Alex Jones presents, and just showing point by point where he's wrong. And I think I was right. I think it was an objective analysis where I was correct, and I think people can pick up on that and see it. So I think that's the reason for the success of that site, besides the fact that there's just not all that much that really compares to what I was doing there. I mean, there's not that many people who try and go into this stuff in detail for a new audience within the, I guess you would say, pro-white movement or pro-white community. There's just not that many people who go into it. It was surprising to me that there were all these points that could have been made that I just didn't see anybody having made yet when I was writing on that site. So,
if I might interrupt here, my take on this is not so much the longer, more complex essays that you wrote, but really the general strength of your position. And
uncompromising.
Here. Your uncompromising positions. Thank you very much. And this, I think, is what appeals so much. And it's the same thing with the Stormer. It's the same. It has the same look and feel to it. And I think that's what is so popular. So you are hitting on something that people want and people will respond to. And most of the people who are leaders or have sites or are trying to get attention in the white movement want to be much more careful, some of them to an extreme timidity, in my opinion. And I said before you came along that we needed to be more direct, and we need to say things just the way they were, not all this carefulness. And nobody was really listening to that. Well, you came along and did it, and whether you're even right or wrong about some of those things doesn't matter. It's just, I think that attitude that you brought forth, I think that's what's been the most important thing. And I do think that that's the secret of why it's so popular.
Well, I think you gave a better answer than I did.
Well, people know exactly where you stand, and I think people want that. You know, they always say about the stock market that, in times of uncertainty, or when there's uncertainty about money issues and so on, or people perceive it that way, then, you know, it's bad for the stock market. But when they feel more certain again, then it's good for the stock market. And I think that's true of all of us. We all want to feel like we're on some kind of solid ground and there's some kind of certainty. And there hasn't been. I don't think that a lot of these, leaders that we've had, or people see them as leaders, have been doing a good job with that at all. And that I think is partly why we're in the bad shape we're in today.
Yeah. And there's so many people who want to say, oh, you're making it too simple. And you need, like when they say that, it's like they want me to make it somehow more complicated.
They want you to tippy-toe around things, or they want you to be uncertain about things.
Yeah, it just seems like they want to play games. And I think for a lot of these people, the older guys who have been doing this tippy-toeing for however many years, I think they feel like I'm kind of like undercutting them by just, you know, going straight to the point and not playing games. I mean, we all feel, I think, at least a lot of us definitely feel like the headlines I put on my site. But then they want to make it into some big intellectual thing where you have to use euphemisms and talk about things like they're more complicated than they actually are. For what reason? I mean, people have been doing this forever and nobody's really that interested in it. I mean, it's a very specific type of person who gets interested in it, I guess. But it hasn't been effective. And, you know, I think that what I am doing is proving to be pretty effective. So hopefully, you know, some of these people will start picking up on that. But whether they do or don't doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, you had a I just brought your site up, but I don't have the whole page showing. And it's not moving. It's not movable over. So you had this article. Well, I might as well bring it up right now, that you just put up yesterday. It was from the UK, and it was about, it was kind of like a summing up of, it's kind of like a New Year thing. Well, 2013, how was it? How did it go? And the person who wrote it, I think it was an organization or something rather than an individual name, said it went very badly and terrible things happened in Britain. And we lost a lot of ground in 2014. And the whole theme of it was that we don't have any time left to be just talking about these things. And that if we don't take action, you know, we're not going to be able to do a thing. And there's just no time to just keep putting it off. And yet it's very difficult to take any action. But they made some good points, for one thing, if the government of the country was determined to do so, it would not be difficult to move all these non-Brits, non-British people back where they came from, particularly the newer ones, you know. If you just help them to move and give them some money and move them and send them out. And it could be done, but it's because the established leadership is totally interested in having it the
and
way
keeping
it
them. Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if they wouldn't take the money, you could send the military in and put them in concentration camps and then ship them out. I mean, these people don't belong in our countries, and it's not our responsibility to deal with them since they're here. I mean, I think we should try and come up with a peaceful solution and offer them money to leave. But if they don't, I mean, rounding them all up would not be that difficult for a military.
Right.
Especially, you know, I don't know, Britain has a huge military too, but in the United States, if you release the Marines and onto the streets just to round all these people up, you know, it would take a couple weeks at maximum. So, it's definitely not an issue of it being impossible. And they bring that up like, well, how can we send all these people back? And it's like, well, you would just do it. There's not.
Right. So as long as we're talking about, as the usual white people, you know, talking together and all that, as long as we just keep talking about it, these people who are in control are never going to change their mind. They're never going to do anything. And you're not going to get, I don't know how long will it take to get enough people angry enough or determined enough to say this is what we want done. And even when people do get angry in various European countries and even here in this country, in the United States, when people do make it clear that they want something and they don't like this other thing that's happening, the powers that be don't pay any attention to it. So
nobody cares. I mean, that's what democracy is. You just have to do whatever you're told to do by this kind of confusing bunch of criminals that you don't even really know who's responsible for anything that's happening.
Yes, and so it seems like people who are still saying, "Well, we need to organize," or "We need to get some people together," or "We need to do this," And we need to have a new association they're not in reality. You know, this is not the way to be talking, because it's not happening. You know, you need to do something. I don't know what it is, but something has to give pretty quickly, or we're just going to be so flooded that we can't ever. I don't see how we can ever win elections anymore. And we're not. No. But I guess what I want. I don't want to just be negative here. I want to say that people in general, these people who are calling for, gather behind me and join my organization and so on. They're not dealing with reality. They're doing something else. And so if we don't
I think there's a lot of personal things tied to it in some cases. I mean, I can't judge people, but yeah, I think there are a lot of people who are not dealing directly with the reality.
Well, right. And I think that until we start doing so, and make it clear to even our own people what needs to be done and how serious this is, and they need to get out of their little easy comfort zone and so on a little bit, it's just not going anywhere. And I think it needs to be recognized that these people are not offering anything, who are just telling you to send in some money and join their organization or something, and they'll be doing something. They don't have any way to do anything.
Well, I think there's a lack of direction, and the thing is so big. I think it's hard for people to look at it and come up with a plan of action, because it's just like, well, where do you even start when you see how massive this problem is? I mean, it's a ubiquitous thing that's just infested every aspect of society, not just with the non-white invasion is just the last nail in the coffin. We have this collapsed social order where the baby boomers sold us out for free sex and drugs and money. So it's such a massive problem that when you're looking at it, it's very difficult to know where to start. So, I mean, I like that people are trying to get together and trying to figure things out. But, I think the most important thing is to try and inform people. That's why I've decided for the time being to focus on this website. And it's also very important to me what's going on in Europe, as I think they're definitely a long way ahead of us with their, nationalist movements.
Yeah, let me just throw in here before we leave this topic that this is what I think that the Daily Stormer shows very clearly how bad things are. And I've seen from the beginning, I thought that was what was so impressive about it, why it was so it meant something. And there's not too many of them that do it in the way that yours does it. Actually, I like the smaller pictures again that you went to when you had your hacking problems there with all those big, because so many of these pictures are so horrible to look at that when they were so big, I just was getting to where I couldn't stand to look at the site. So I think it's better when they're not so big. I can tolerate it more easily. But you really show how horrible things are that are going on.
Yeah, it's all pretty bad.
So now you said, now you're going back to Europe. Now you're home, visiting family over Christmas and New Year. And, you needed to do something about your visa, I understand. And you spent quite a number of months in Greece, and then you traveled around in Europe a little bit, and now you want to go back. So, why do you think it's important for you to go back to Europe and not just stay here and help out with what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I guess there's a number of reasons. I'd like to see what happens in Greece in May at the elections. I think it's going to be historical. Something crazy could happen, like that we don't even imagine happening in the modern era, So I think that's important to me to be back there and see that and spend some more time with these guys. And then I'd like to go to some other places in Europe I didn't get a chance to visit, and talk to people and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well,
I mean, I guess that's it. Right now, the way I was living in Europe is probably cheaper than it is for me to definitely in Greece than it is for me to live here in the U.S. So that's an issue also while I'm trying to focus on the website. I don't have to try and come up with a real big income mm-hmm. to survive, you know?
Right.
So that's right. A personal reason.
Well, it's always good to get the experience of being in various European places and so on. You know, I certainly don't agree with that. Well, so are you going to be going back there, and you want to see what else do I have here? Well, I was going to talk a little bit about why I think you are one of the people and maybe the primary person that I look to for hopefully something good happening in the near future, because we don't have a long future to look at. And why that is, because I tend to be, to be critical of the people in this movement. And I don't see hardly anybody doing anything that seems to me to be hopeful or useful. So, I think that you show certain characteristics that that cause you, and I think other people must see them too, because otherwise you wouldn't be as popular as you are. So, I was going to ask you how, but I guess you can't really answer how you account for that. But, you know, I think that you're basically, I've known you for quite a while now, and, you know, I feel like I know you. And I think that you are sincere. You know, I've come down on that you may have not been right about everything when you first, you know, got involved in all this. And you may have had a few issues in the beginning with certain information and so on. But you're very quick to see your error and willing to, you know, when better information comes up. You're not stubborn, and you may agree. Sometimes I might think that you agree with people too much because you like to get along. But at the same time, you do need to be an agreeable person like you are. So that's all very good. So basically, you're not a fake, and you never do anything fakey, I don't think. So congratulations on that, Andre.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. It means a lot. Yeah, I definitely try not to do anything fakey. That's something my whole life I've been against. So I try and keep it real.
That's pretty clear. And then you're not a prima donna, like some people have accused you of being, without much intelligence, but... and you don't have any interest in retaliating for slights or personal injuries. When things happen, you just kind of let it go, and you move on. You're very easygoing in a lot of ways. And I could be critical of being too easygoing, but then when I think about it, on the other hand, you always end up making the right decisions, I think, and you end up doing the right thing. So it's not so much that you're too easygoing or too soft with people, but that you just don't want to get in fights. You just don't want to get into arguments, which you have often called childish or silly or something. And so then but in the end, you don't cave into anything. I haven't seen you cave into anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't have to talk about specific drama, I guess, but with these people, I don't have anything against anybody, and anybody who's attacked me, you know, I'm not going to get in a fight with them. I don't see that serves any purpose. Unless they want to, you know, debate some point, some idea, I'm completely open to that. But just when it's personal attacks or calling me names or whatever, I don't have any interest in that. But at the same time, anybody who wants to do good things to help the cause, I'm fully ready to support. So, I mean, I think that's been my position, and it continues to be my position, that anybody who's able to offer anything, I would like to support them. But there's some things that, you know, that people do that I can't support. So, I don't, but I'm not trying to attack people. Certainly not attack people personally and all this stuff that people get into.
Well, right now, you have kind of defined, as time has gone on, it's only been basically for most of us knowing you a year. It's been a long year, though, the 2013.
It's been a very long year.
The more things that happen, the longer it seems. Yeah. So you have taken different positions, and then you've kind of corrected yourself, and then you've taken another, and then you've. But you're always looking to find yourself on solid ground. So what do you think about where do you stand now? I mean, what do you think is, like I would put it, acceptable from in the white community and not acceptable? Or what kind of beliefs are absolutely imperative for whites to have, and what beliefs might be totally wrong for whites to have, if you can follow that.
Yeah. Well, I think the anti-Christian stuff is totally wrong, but I think it's such a small, you know, vocal minority that's not really that much of an issue once you start to appeal to a wider audience. I don't get a lot of that on the Daily Stormer now, the people coming in whining about Christianity. So I think that, and then I had this conflict with John Friend, who, you know, I don't want to bring up any drama about that, but, you know, we had a disagreement about the importance of focusing on, you know, more, I guess you would say, obscure type of conspiracy theories. Because so many people, I think, coming into a racial type anti-Semitic movement are coming from the old quote truth movement. You know, there's a lot of baggage that gets brought along with them sometimes.
Yes.
And I think that needs to be noted and addressed. You know, I wouldn't say regulated. I'm not in a position to regulate what people talk about, but you know, I'm not going to promote that type of conspiracy stuff. And unfortunately, with John, he, you know, I think he just pushed it too hard and got into stuff that was just too far from the main. And I'm not even trying at all to talk bad about John. I still like John as a person very much, but he just went in a direction that was. Too much. So, you know, I understand people have their own personal quirks and their own beliefs about things. And I think that there needs to be room for that. But at the same time, I mean, we need a cohesive and comprehensive message that appeals to normal people. And I don't think there's really a way to fit the Antichrist stuff or the hardcore type conspiracy stuff into such a message. So I mean, the positive aspect of the message, I think, basically needs to be traditionalist. I guess would be a simple way of saying it. I think most people agree on that, you know, pro-family, anti-gay, anti-immigration, anti, you know, all these new things that have been introduced into society as far as gender roles, you know, pro-tradition, we all know what that is. And I think that that's just how it needs to be. But I don't really see a lot of people disagreeing really on that particular point. I mean, you have faggots like Greg Johnson going and talking about, you know, we need a pro-white, pro-homosexual movement. And then you have Greg Johnson was promoting some guy who talks about pickup art. He acts like he's a pro-white. He's anonymous, of course, but he talks about being a pickup artist and, you know, trying to seduce as many women as possible and that that's how you should define your masculinity. So there's some stuff like that on the fringes, but I don't really get exposed to it very much. I think most people agree that we need to focus on a traditional message. Even the people that I've disagreed with seem to agree on that.
Yeah, well, I think that I'm trying to get at some very basic disagreements that might be something that couldn't be overcome. Now, do you think, and you're probably not going to be too comfortable with this, do you think that that you could make up again with John Friend after the way that he behaved from that debate that they did, which seemed to be an overreaction to the debate?
Well, I think he got a little bit emotional in his ego or whatever, but I don't know how to answer that question. Of course, you know, I'm not going to shut. I've tried to be with people who have had disagreements with me, be, you know, forgiving and open to working together again. But I think that John's positions as far as this stuff with actors and that everything is CGI and I don't need to go into all of it. People who are familiar with John are familiar with what he talks about. I just think it's too far out there for me to associate myself with.
But after that, he came up and said that after the debate, he was bent out of shape. But then after there was another radio program with you, Mike Delaney, and Scott Roberts, then he came out with the, well, I don't want anything more to do with these no good, lousy guys. They've shown that they're no good, you know. They've shown that they have no, I mean, he used a lot of very strong words that I can't think of them right now. And that was like, that was it. I'll never have anything to do with them again. I'm finished with them. You know, that was just because he couldn't take, I guess, a little criticism. Then he brought on a bunch of allies, not a bunch, a couple of allies of his, and they did their own shows about it, and they talked about all this stuff. It's just, that was real, real dramatic. Then he put me in the same category with you three, although Mike, criticism of his was nothing like that. It was totally different. It was about his friendliness to Jews and so on. His to me, insincerity.
Well, that was part of our criticism as well, since so many of the people promoting those type of theories are Jews.
Yeah.
Including this, I just found out Steve Pizniak, I think is his name. He wrote books with Tom Clancy. He's one of the writers of the crisis actors at Sandy Hook theory on the Alex Jones show. And then there's that Jew on YouTube. And then these other Jews involved in this whole thing. So, I mean, it just looks like a total Jew disinformation operation to me from the bottom. So, I mean, that's my, and that doesn't really have anything at all to do with John as a person. So
it does, but it does, because, you know, I'm just putting things into categories here about if people in the white movement who might not be on the up and up or not, might not be what we want them to be. Now, I would say they're either incompetent or they're not sincere. Now, if you're not sincere, I had to think a bit about what that meant. You know, so I thought you could either be working for the enemy, which is a pretty bold thing to say about someone, and maybe not at all true, or else you're wanting to extend it to non-whites. You're wanting to extend the white movement to non-whites. So there's a lot of sympathy in the movement for that. But speaking about John Friend, it just still seems to me that he is working with too many people who are on the side, basically on the side of the enemy, not on the side of what whites need to do to save our race. So I just can't get over that, you know. I can't get over that hurdle. And now he's still been doing it. Like you said, he's still been getting involved with all these people and all these Jewish movements. And at the same time, he makes this big effort to write about Jews. And he just had something today, which I'm just going to say this real quick. I'm taking up your show to say this, and I can talk about this on Monday if I want to. But why he wrote today, yesterday, Friday, why do Americans still support Israel? It wrote this little essay that says absolutely nothing. It quotes from the Jewish Daily Forward a bunch of stuff, you know, that they wrote. And then he just says the usual, has a few paragraphs saying the absolutely usual stuff that everybody knows, unless he thinks that mainstream people are reading his blog and don't know about these things. It seems to me that it's just an effort that he makes to appear to be anti-Jewish by saying the same things that everybody knows about Israel and the American politicians, American government, and so on, over and over again.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I like John, and I don't want to really just, you know, talk bad about him. I think he's written some pretty good stuff about Jews, and I think it's been popular. So it's unclear to me why he doesn't want to go with that popular message and would rather go with, you know, what I assume is a pretty, it's definitely a fringe message about the actors and the invisible CGI stuff on 9/11 and whatever.
Well, it's also the people who do this kind of thing and have been doing it for a long, long time. You know, the people
if there if there wasn't all these mixed messages, then there would only be one opposition. You know, in Greece, when somebody's opposed to the establishment, they have they don't have all this crap. They do have a left and a right that are both ostensibly opposed to the establishment. But you know where you stand. You go with a large group of people who agree with you. You don't have all this. In America, on the internet, there's just all this nonsense, and it just floods your mind. And but I think it's clearing up now. I mean,
I don't
you
think
don't
so.
Have
look
anybody
at all these,
talking about?
Well, maybe for you and for me, but look at these shows that have they have all kinds of guests, and John does the same thing. He's always done it. We have all kinds of guests who say opposite things. He says, well, this is educational for people. It's not educational.
No, it's not.
It's very suspicious because it causes people to hear this and hear that and hear the other thing and think that, well, they're all good points. So everybody has a right to their own view of things, you know.
It's like the reality is subjective. I mean, is ultimately what that comes back to. The idea that there is nothing that's real and it's just whatever you believe is real is the truth. Is what I get from that. I mean, when Jeff Rentz does that, where he just agrees with everybody, no matter what they're saying.
That's right.
But I mean, I think that there's been a lot of, because you know, I was involved since I've been a teenager in this type of stuff, alternative, whatever. And when I got involved, when I was 17 or 18, listening to Alex Jones and these different people, I mean, they were talking about satanic cults and secret ritual mind control and, you know, going on and on about stuff that just isn't even real and doesn't matter.
And you're saying that that's not going on so much anymore, huh?
It's not. People are talking about Jews, and they're not even talking about, you know, I mean, you read.
Okay. Well, you're right. That has made, they used to not even be able to say Jew. So that has been a lot of progress there.
Yeah, and nobody even says Zionist anymore. I mean, you look stupid if you talk about Zionists. It's not the Jews, it's the Zionists. Because, I mean, I think that people, you know, like yourself, and have put this message in that it's Jews, and that this is a problem with the Jewish people, not some ideology that they may have, because they have a whole bunch of different ideologies. But they're all Jews, and they're all Jewish ideologies that they're pushing. So, you know,
okay,
I think
Jew is in. So yeah. So John Friend talks about Jews. But there's something wrong when he talks about Jews the way he does, in a very, you know, very anti-Semitic way. Well, another thing was when he made a big deal out of the ADL writing something on him because of his guest that he had, who was a kind of semi-establishment person. And so they wrote up about John Friend, and he writes this headline, "Oh, those dirty ADLs are calling me an anti-Semite." Well, doesn't he want to be called an anti-Semite? See, this is like sending different messages. It doesn't make any sense. And he's writing like he's really angry, and they didn't have any right to say that about him because he's like, well, not.
See? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that situation, but I wish the ADL would write about me. They haven't.
No, they don't want to give you the attention. Well, they have written about me, and they have written about, and so has the SPLC, but neither one is on their big people list. You know, I'm not on the big
on both
list.
On go both ahead. ADL and SPLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything. My feelings hurt. I'm going to call Foxman up.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, the point I want to make is that we have to be, I think, very critical. We have to look critically at, not meanly, and not, but we have to look critically at the people in our movement, and we have to see if what they're doing makes sense, even if it might be a little different than what we would do. But if it makes sense, it's okay. But if it doesn't make sense, then I think it needs to be looked at more, because I think the most important element in our difficulty is what people who are not really supporting us, who are working within our midst. I really do think this, and this causes then people to think paranoia, and to people to think, well, you're dividing people, and you know, and they don't like it. They don't like talking against people who seem to be sincerely working for our side. But I think it needs to be looked at very carefully, because there's nothing more destructive than those who are working on the inside.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe it's worth mentioning that there is some room for disagreement on certain issues. There's, you know, I think there is some. I've published, for instance, different opinions about Putin. My own opinion on him is mixed, so I guess it makes sense I would publish mixed opinions. But for, you know, just issues that are clearly issues of opinion, where nobody can say for sure or not about them, I think there is room for disagreement, and for people to have their own views on things. But those issues would be rather inconsequential generally. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are certain things that are okay to say, and certain things that are not helpful to say.
And a person who is really working sincerely should know the difference between these.
That's
two.
The thing. Really, and when it's pointed out and explained why it's not helpful, they should be able to recognize it as such. I mean, Scott Roberts, we had that debate, and I don't know, we still, I guess, disagree about that stuff, but I've talked to him, and I was like, man, you know, this is what we need to do, is focus on a cohesive and simplified message, and going into this stuff, it's just not necessarily necessary, and it could confuse people. So, you know, what do you think about that? And he said, I completely agree with you. You know, we need to focus on the simple stuff we can prove, and that just needs to be where the message is at. So, you know, I think that when you explain this to people, if they're able to understand it, then there's not really any any disagreement unless they have personal ego things tied up with it. But I also think we're going through a transformation process where the message is still being streamlined. And that's one of the main purposes I had for Daily Stormer was streamlining a message. Because, you know, there was all this crap going on, from the old pro white movement where they were big into, you know, dressing up like Nazis and whatever else they were into. In the old, I guess.
But I think those are two different movements. There is a pro-white movement or white, you might even say National Alliance type, okay? And then there was the neo-Nazi movement, which was totally different, in my opinion, even though sometimes it overlapped or the neo-Nazis would go and attend the events of the others and they were allowed, accepted, because they were, you know, they believed the same things, but they just had this other. I've never liked the dress up neo Nazis, although I did like
Bill White.
No, the other the big famous one, George Lincoln Rockwell. Yeah, I did like him. I thought it worked well for him, but
he had a plan.
Yeah, and he was closer to it. The farther we get away from 1940s, the more ridiculous it is. And I do think that these are infiltrated movements. And there's all kinds of questions about them. So I wouldn't even give them the time of day. And yet here we've got now people, who have these radio programs and shows are giving interviews to these very people, like the head of the National Socialist Movement. And then also this guy who has, Nazi site who actually says he accepts Jews and so on. So there's a lot of strange people, but they're given attention on these radio programs to explain what they think. And it just, to me, it keeps everything confused.
Yeah. Well, so what I was saying is that there's kind of a transformation from that type of confusion that was going on. And, you know, with these weird, like the creativity cult, I mean, I don't want to, anybody who believes that, whatever, that's your own business. But to try and promote that to people as if that's going to save America, you know, it's just.
Yeah, but at one time, you know, at one time, the creativity was a pretty good movement. And there are a lot of good people in it. I knew some very good people in it. But it somehow sputtered out. I think it's because that guy got put in prison. They really went all out to destroy it because it was a threat. It did have some value, although you're right, they were way too anti-Christian for me to be able to join anything
well,
like that.
It's but, just coming at it from a practical standpoint, nothing like that is ever going to prove to be a significant force of change in the United States. Well, I mean, it could somehow spur change, I guess, but as far as like, you know, hundreds of millions of people in the United States saying, yeah, whatever they say about Christianity. That's just not ever going to happen in real life. So I think that's, something that,
well, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good for our society, the way we would want our society to be absolutely non-Christian, to stamp out Christianity and put something else in its place. That is not proven out and that people aren't used to and so on. Only a kind of an elite group, like it and are used to it. So it just doesn't seem to be, something that's really good for us. It's because some people can't just hate everything Christian that they think they can do that or should do that, but it doesn't seem good. Before we go to the break here, we've only got a few minutes. I want to ask you, where would you draw the line when it comes to accepting non-whites into white, even white organizations or pro-white groups?
Well, I mean, I think they should have their own organizations. Why would we accept any of them?
Okay.
I don't think we should accept any of them. I think that if they had their own organizations, we could, you know.
Well, what about you know, this whole thing? I don't want to get into this too much, really. But you know, what if it's one quarter non-white, or you know, one quarter this or that, or.
I don't know. I don't know how you do that without having it be a math equation, which then becomes it comes across as silly. That's what I've decided. I mean, you kind of know if somebody's white or they're not by looking at them and talking to them. I think a quadroon is I don't think these people look white or behave white. So I don't think that's okay, but I don't know.
When it comes to blacks, they take over the DNA pretty good. But when you're talking about some other groups, some Semites, very soon, only get 60 seconds before the break. When you're talking about Semites, it's not as easy to
Asians, yeah.
Or Asians too, probably.
And yeah. Indians. American
Indians.
So, Indian.
That's not something, do you think that there should be a big conversation about that?
I don't know. I think the conversation should just be pushed away and not really addressed. I think we should just take it as, you know, we know what is white and what isn't.
Right. I mean, I don't think we should waste our time with extensive conversation about that subject. Well, there's still a lot that we can talk about, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and I'm going to open the phone lines when we get back, or, you know, allow you to call in. So you can be thinking about that, and I'll check my email in the meantime, too. So please take a little break, listen to our musical interlude, and I'll be back with Andrew Anglin.
Kamera, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich schwöre dir, so wahr ich hier stehe, ich trage die Fahne, wohin ich auch gehe. Nie werde ich euch verraten, für kein Geld der Welt. Ich kämpfe für dich, ungebrochener Held. Ich kämpfe für dich, unbekannter Held. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich gedanke zu mir sprich. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nehmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht,
egal was geschieht,
wir werden bei euch sein. Und wer dann auch lügt, euer Namen benutzt, eure Heldentaten durch Geld ihr beschmutzt, den trifft das Schwert von unsichtbarer Hand. Ein Totenwächter von Wotan gesandt. Ein Totenwächter im schwarzen Gewand. Doch ich höre eine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Zeit, übernimmt unseren Eid, nimm im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen, und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Kamerad, du siehst, wir stehen für euch ein, die Kraft, die wir brauchen, wird uns Wotan verleihen, ihr gabt so viel, für dieses Land, es war der Glaube, der euch verband. Es war der Glaube, der euch verband. für deine Stimme. Ich dachte, du mir sprichst. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimmt im Geiste die Waffen. Ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und kehre ich einst an deinen Stein zurück, berichte ich dir von unserem Glück. Dann ist es geschafft und wir sind wieder frei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, darum ging's mir dabei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, denn jetzt sind wir frei. Ich höre deine Stimme, wie sanft zu mir sprichst. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht,
egal was geschieht,
wir werden bei euch sein. Deine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Und bis an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Halt. Wir sind Geiste, die Waffen. Ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on Saturday afternoon with Carolyn. It is January 4th, 2014, and my guest today, we're in this our second final hour of the show. My guest is the very personable Andrew Anglin of Daily Stormer, and he's always good-natured about all of my questions and going off on this and that. And I want to now ask you, Andrew, about the question that comes up, which kind of bugs me the way some people put it, and that is Arianism, or they will even say Nordicism. Well, I think generally say Arianism is a spiritual thing more than it is blood or racial. And what is your answer to that? That anybody can be an Aryan if they have the right spiritual qualities, or they have, you know, if they have characteristics of honor and all the things that are always listed for that, rather than blood.
Well, I don't know. There's two different definitions of the word.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how we usually use it is means white. What's his name that wrote the book where he classified the different segments of the Aryan race, Nordic, Mediterranean, and Alpine. Can't think of the guy's name right now. He wrote a book in the 20s, I think,
yeah,
or the teens. So, I mean, that's how we usually use the term. So what I've seen with people saying that, you know, if you have these traits, then you're an Aryan, they're using an archaic form of the word, which means noble, and then kind of mixing the two terms together. So I don't know.
Well,
I think what we're talking about is race. So to mix that in and say that people are white because they have noble traits doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, I see that more and more in comments mainly, than not anybody really writing about it too much, but in comments, people saying this, you know, and nobody calls them on it that I notice, you know, and sometimes I would like to, but I decided to just, you know, stay out of it because you get caught up in arguments this way and you can't get out of it. But again, but
I've never known a comment section argument to really be that productive.
Yeah, right. Well, some people really like to get into things in comment sections, though, and they do clarify some things, but you're right. It's not sometimes I've heard you say it, and sometimes I think, too, that I don't know how good comments are. People want comments to show that, you know, people are listening, and we all want to hear some feedback, but they do get they're hard to monitor, you know. It's really a pain.
Yeah, Daily Stormer is getting, like, one day last week you got 500 comments in one day.
Gosh.
So it does get
there's a lot of people who really like to read comments, and of course I think we can waste a lot of time reading comments. You get caught up reading some of them sometimes. Some things I find are interesting, other things I don't, but you know, it's like everybody has their say, and they say this, that, and the other thing, and that's not very productive of our people's energy either, is it?
No, I mean, I think it can form, you know, a sense of community when there's regular commenters and they exchange personal anecdotes and this type of stuff. I think it can be beneficial, which is why I have comments on the site, and I think people like to know that, you know, their words are being read, and if they're, you know, relaying a certain opinion or relating some personal experience or something. So I don't think it's all negative. What I have now, because I can't spend a lot of time regulating the comments, is I just ban somebody at first offense if they say something, you know, somebody should be killed. Or if they say something that I think is inappropriate, I just ban them immediately, which I've gotten complaints about that. But I, you know, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. No, right. I mean, these are people don't have a right to be heard on a comment of somebody else's website. They don't really.
No, I don't. I think it's a privilege, not a right.
Yeah, that's right.
As the way I look at it. And I try to let people, you know, some dissenting opinions and this type of stuff. I try and be pretty liberal as possible with it. But, you know, there comes a point where I just don't have the time.
Okay. Well, if Arianism is a racial term, and that is, and we have a lot of, competing ideas about that, but rather than get involved in what the racial questions are, you had indicated to me that you would rather be doing, if you could do whatever you wanted, was to work with restoring the social order. I thought that sounded real good. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? And before you start, I'll just say the phone number 1-830-443-4911, and if anybody wants to call in now and ask something of Andrew. Okay, well, how would you answer that question?
Well,
I mean, how would you describe what you mean by that?
Well, that's what's always been important to me before I ever got involved in the racial type issues is the social order and the way modernism or modernity, I guess you could just say, it has corroded and broken down the cohesiveness of our society and created so much alienation between individuals. And I mean, that's what's been important to me. What eventually I realized is that, you know, blood, and I realized this by living in other cultures with non-white people. I realized that our blood, our racial soul is such a big part of, the way our social order works, and that the breakdown of our social order came, due to exploitations of our own racial identity, which, I mean, this race stuff, I mean, it's so important to understand that it makes up who you are. I mean, it has nothing to do with color of skin, except, you know, on the very most superficial level. I mean, it has to do with with the blood of your ancestors coming down through generations and making up who you are, how you feel, the way that you think and process information, and the things that you care about, your morality and your entire identity, I think, comes from the blood. So,
of course, it's not literally blood. It's not literally in the blood, although it could be. I guess somewhere it could be, but it's in the
DNA.
The DNA and the soul, yeah, because I do believe in soul and in soul groups and racial souls, you know, that we have a group soul, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we can explain it without the need for anything spiritual. I think you can use the science to make a spiritual argument, but if you don't want to go into that, I mean, you can explain it just with the DNA that we are a combination of our ancestors. That's what makes up every cell in our bodies, mm-hmm. is the genetic code of our ancestors. So, you know, and I think that culture and society are a projection of this. And, you know, the problems that we've suffered as a people, I think are unique to us. Not that other peoples aren't obviously having some problems as well with this modern system, but I think the way our problems have developed could have only developed in white society based on exploiting, certain intrinsic characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what's always been important to me was trying to figure out a way to reform society in a way where people's lives would have more meaning and, where people would feel connected to each other and feel that they belong and that their lives have meaning and that they're passing something on by living and sticking to a certain morality and value system that promotes extending themselves into future generations as in the way that our ancestors in the way that we are extensions of our ancestors.
Right. And so so for you, you're really a person who has a deep sense of decency, I think. And you're so offended by the indecency in society. I don't know that everybody is. You know, all white people, even all white activists, are as offended by so much of this stuff that we see as you are. You are when you use the word traditionalist, you're very much in the traditional sense. You'd like to be in a traditional society, a traditional white society. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Yes, and I think it takes a lot of looking at yourself as well as looking at the society to understand what that means in the way that this has come undone. I mean, so much of the.
Yeah, let me just interrupt for a second. I'm very sorry.
Sure.
To tell this person calling that I've said before. I don't take calls from undisclosed numbers. I've had bad luck with that. So whoever is ringing now with the undisclosed number, please hang up because I won't answer it. And there he hung up. And if you have a regular number, call in with that. Thanks. Okay, sorry.
So what was I saying?
Yeah, I don't know. You were talking about the, you know, a traditional society.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. Oh, I was going to say with the sexual liberation, this had to do with, in large part, with Boaz and Margaret Mead and Freud and what's that other Jew? Was his name Reich that made that orgone night or orgone chamber and talked so much about sexual liberation? So much of that had to do with trying to apply. The sexual standards of non-white primitive cultures to white Christian society and saying that Christianity was the reason for this, quote, sexual repression. And then if you didn't have Christianity, you would have like the same type of sexual morals as, you know, what was it, the Polynesians had, and they went to other primitive. But if you had those same sexual morals, you would have that same type of primitive society. I mean, that's what those people are adapted to, and it's normal for them to have this kind of a very loose sexual morality. So I think that you kind of have to understand the white identity and how it developed in order to understand the kind of social order that we need to be. That we need to be striving for, and you cannot apply the standards of these people who developed completely differently in a completely different environment, with different IQs, different desires, different. I mean, they have different levels of serotonin in their brains. They have different hormonal makeups and all this stuff. It can't be applied to us. So,
that's right.
You know, just with the issue of the sexual liberation movement, and a lot of it did have to do with bringing up these primitive cultures. And I think that has brought down our society as we begin to act like, you know, the blacks, where they just all have sex with each other and they don't have any real emotion attached to it or even care about having a long-term relationship with the parent of their child. You know, it's so that's an example of the way you have to relate race to the traditional social order. And I think it has to be framed as a traditional.
Well, I think that's so very true. So very, very true. And that's why they want these Jews who were doing this back in those days, when they started out with this stuff in this country, they wanted us to feel bad, feel like there's something wrong with our society. There is something wrong with the whole social structures that we had built, and we were repressed and so on, as you said, and we should become more like this, that, and the other. That was to just in the end destroy our societies. That's exactly what it was for. So that shows that why race is important. And Hitler spoke about that too a lot when he talked about race. He made it clear that it wasn't because you hated other people, but he said you couldn't have a good society, say for German people, if you had a bunch of people who weren't Germans in it. You know, that just didn't work out. And this is what they want to, this goes for all people. And but particularly probably for us, for white people, and they always want to undermine this and say that we're not good enough, and we need to learn from all these other people.
Yeah, and that was a key part of it of this whole thing was the devolving of the sexual norms. And that was attached to, you know, Freud and these other Jews where they said that we were repressed and we needed to be liberated. But what's happened? Now we have unlimited abortions and single parent households and nobody feels like they're connected to anyone else. I mean, when you don't have a family, you can't have a society. And these primitives that they brought up to defend the sexual liberation had a completely different form of society. A completely different form of a family where they had an extended family. And if somebody had a kid, they would kind of all raise it together.
That's
the same
right.
thing that blacks do now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can witness blacks doing this now where they have these huge extended family units that all help each other out. And that are pretty close together. But we, because of the situation in the cold North, developed these nuclear families. And so when they removed that, we're not falling back on a black style of extended family. We just don't even have families anymore. And there's just no way our society can sustain this. And this is why it goes into all this new sexual perversion with the queers, and then you have all these drugs that people have to take because they feel so alienated by society. Mm-hmm.
It all feeds on itself. One thing leads to another. It just gets worse and worse.
Yes, like a spiral. Mm-hmm. Where everything is just a part of this massive mess. Because the materialism was very tied to the sexual liberation, where there was no more higher ideals, and everybody just kind of took on this, I don't know, you could call it a feminine, I guess, is what Evola called it, this materialistic worldview where you look at the material above the immaterial values of honor and these things. Not that women don't have that, but a woman is more naturally prone because of her role in society to be more drawn to material things than a man. So the society has adapted this form of thinking, putting material things above immaterial things and values, and the idea of carrying something on for the next generation. And it was the baby boomers that you know, sold everybody out for money and sex and drugs and just feeling good all the time. That was the new concept of being a human being, was to feel good all the time. And you see that now the Christian churches in America all embrace this idea of the purpose of human existence is to feel good all the time. It's really the same ideology as the atheists have that is promoted by these modern Protestant and now even the Catholic Church, that's the purpose of your existence is to feel really good and have fun times.
Okay, now in defense of women, let me just say that I think what women are concerned with naturally because of their, the way they're made is security. Women naturally feel more concerned about security, and that in our day and age, is represented by money and material things and so on. So that gets into that, but I don't think that women are more materialistic than men. I don't think they used to be. They depended on men, on the man more than they, you know, back in the old days when there wasn't any state to depend on. But then they depended on finding some kind of security for themselves and their children, so to raise their children and so on. So because they're just built that way, so that's.
Now we have a backward system where men and women, because of the way this is developed, they don't really need each other anymore. So, I mean, the baby boomers all just decided they would get divorced because they could do something more fun than, you know, commit themselves to the person they had children with. Because they didn't materially need each other anymore. I mean, it used to be a situation where the woman needed the man to provide, and now that we don't have that situation anymore with feminism and the idea that we should force women into the workplace, the basic marriage hardly even makes sense. I mean, that was one of the first things that Hitler did in 33 was, to tell the women that they should be at home taking care of the home and having children rather than in the workplace. And he viewed it as an oppression of women that they had been forced into the workplace by this quote democratic Jew system.
Well, right. That did happen. And it was, they just passed a law or some kind of regulations or whatever that the jobs go to men first because there are all these unemployed men. So women were holding jobs that they wanted to give all the jobs to men until there weren't any more unemployed men. Then women could have jobs. And, you know, women seem to have gone along with it fairly well. They weren't out there rioting or, screaming and yelling about it. And they presented it in such a way because they had a whole program worked out, which was helped everybody, you know, to do their part. And they had all kinds of programs for women, for teaching them how to run the household and, you know, baby care and so on. And they were teaching it in the schools then right off the bat. And you know, when you can take over your government, then there's a lot that you can do. But when you're trying to work from outside the government and you've got enemies in the government, then you're at a real loss. But it just shows, I think I totally agree with you that the reasons for the kind of social order that we had, there were reasons for it. And when that is destroyed, we see that everything is undermined after that.
It evolved naturally. So it worked because it's what allowed us to survive. It's what the process of generations created, was a certain system, which we now call, we can now refer to as the traditional white Christian social order. But it evolved over generations. And so, of course, it worked. And now we've tried to restructure everything, you know, question it like there was a problem with it when there wasn't. It was just a bunch of people who wanted to have sex and do drugs, and these Jews were like, yeah, do it, it'll be fun. And the whole thing is just falling apart. And you know, it's really all happened after the war, when I think the white European people lost a war with the Jews, and we've all been occupied by these people, and they've been running everything since. But I mean, I've said, this is kind of an interesting concept. They're almost like the vampire or the devil that you have to invite inside. And I think that's what, during the 60s revolution, that's what happened, is they invited the devil inside with all this wonderful, fun stuff that they were being offered by these Jews in the universities, in this, you know, the media with the rock and roll and the television dance shows that were so sexy, you know, and they just sold out an ancient civilization to some however many thousands of years old, at least. I mean, back to Athens, they sold the whole thing out. And now we're living with the consequences of that, and just being ruled over by Jews.
Well, I would say that I would argue that it's not just Jews, but it's Jews and communists. And these communists are hardcore, really left wingers. And there's a lot of them that aren't Jews, and they work with the Jews. The Jews, I think, are the most are powerful, because they're more powerful. They get into every group and become powerful. But you know, there is that liberal, that left wing. It shouldn't even be called liberal, because that's has a totally different meaning traditionally. But this, yeah, these super left wingers, you see them all over in Germany since they got to take over after 1945 and get in power. And they're not Jewish, but they'll stand up for the Jews, of course, and they'll also stand up for their own political control.
Well. I think the point is that the Jews invented all this stuff, and they're the ones that promoted it and manipulated people into accepting it and got it solidified. It's like when people talk about the problem was with the Enlightenment, which then caused the Industrial Revolution. Well, yeah, those created a lot of problems that needed dealt with, but they would have been dealt with, I believe, by, you know, intelligent, responsible white men, if it wasn't for these Jews in there screwing everything up and manipulating things.
You know, when Hitler basically took away the power from the Jews in Germany, he still had to deal with all these pro-communists, and also the elitists who wanted to keep their aristocratic type power going. So these are real forces. That these people don't want to give that up. They don't like seeing the working classes thriving and not being under their control.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, there are some, when you have the capitalist system, you have the scummiest scumbags who should be, you know, either in prison or cleaning a street somewhere. become the most powerful people, because the fact that they're lacking in moral fortitude kind of drives them to the top. So you do have this problem. I mean, I would never say that every single white person is good, necessarily. There are obviously people who don't have proper morality, who but when you have the systems that the Jew creates, then you have the waste of society, the lowest life forms from our own race rise to the top of the pyramid because they don't have morality.
Yeah. Okay. Well, to bring this topic a little bit to a close, how would do you have any ideas to how we'd go about restoring our social order? I mean, besides just convincing people and showing people how bad it really is and that something has to be done or what?
Well, before or after we take over the government?
Yeah. Well, you see, let's say we can't take over the government right now. So what would we? We know what to do after we would take over the government. And there's all these people out there. They give me a pain, too. And they're guys who will say, well, after we take over the government, after we take over, we're going to hang these people. We're going to deal with these people. We're going to give them what they deserve. Well, they have no plan on how to take over. So I get tired of this tough talk, you know, that people want to use.
Yeah,
this again speaks to let's get realistic and let's talk in realistic terms, you know, about what can be done. So if we can't take over the government, right, you know, what is there?
Well, if we cannot use the power of the state to restructure society, then you're basically just dealing with individuals who are interested in going along with the plan. And I think we can, you know, it's limited. We can encourage people to behave in a certain way. But I think it's hard for people. You know, just even I would like to get married and have kids. It's difficult to find, you know, somebody who's suitable. But I think that can be encouraged. And for men to be encouraged to take care of women, and for women to be encouraged to play that role and to have babies. I mean,
you do that. You really do that on your sites. You were especially doing that on the fascism site when you were able to write blogs and stuff. But and I think that's one of the biggest problems we have. And there's a lot of men who are so guilty of it, who just want to be against women and blame women for blame our women for everything.
Well, and it comes across as really weak. I mean, a lot of these people, I won't name any names, but they want to spend, you know, time on their websites talking about their ex-wives. And it's like, what are you even doing? What does that have to do with anything? And I think it just shows a lack of masculinity and ability to manage situations. But at the same time, you know, it's the women are pretty messed up. The men are pretty messed up. We have a totally destroyed society that we're living in. I mean, so to try and figure it out, I don't know. But I think that is the most important aspect of anything is the family. And I think that's why that was the first thing to go, you know, by promoting the sex stuff, which just destroys the whole thing. I think that the very most important thing is the family. And so that's what I would encourage anybody to focus on, in their own personal lives. 'Cause if we haven't taken over the government yet, then we can only talk about individuals and their voluntary behavior. So I think that's, and you know, just to be.
Well, then somebody, maybe some people should be working on that, on, coming up with, male, female websites or forums or something. It's hard, but it's hard, especially when people are anonymous, you know, because when they're, I mean, really anonymous, you know, where they just take some name and they just write stuff. Because, you know, people get in there and cause a lot of problems. But, you know, it should be somebody making an effort to bridge the white nationalist type male-female gap, because it can get pretty bad. And that would be a real good place to start doing something. If anybody had the fortitude to do it, I don't. But
Yeah, it's a mess. I don't know. I think there's a lot more men involved than there are women, and I don't go out and look for women who are, you know, Nazis. That's not
no.
So I mean, for politics are kind of a male thing, usually. Not always, but a lot of the time.
Well,
they
you're
are,
right.
So.
You're right, and you know, but see, a lot of these men, they just find it easier to start looking for non-white women, and this is another problem, and this comes up in a lot of ways, and they don't want to admit that either. So they say, well, it's white women's fault because they won't. Oh, I hate really getting into this. I don't want to get into it. But, you know, so nothing I can do about these, you know, and so then more of this miscegenation goes on, you know, more of it goes on. And they want to hide it, but they want to do it because they want to have a woman, and they want to have a woman they can live with. It is a huge problem for us, and the birth rate problem is huge and just getting worse. So we have serious, serious, serious problems. With our race, and it seems to be no way to really make much progress on them. I hate, you know, I mean, it just comes down to that.
Well, I think we are making progress, Carolyn. I think we're moving forward.
Okay.
With a lot of stuff, we are making progress. It just takes time, and I think you know, the stuff that's going on in Europe. I'm happy very happy with the Golden Dawn. I'm happy with other. There's a good party in Bulgaria. Even the NPD in Germany is making progress. You know, I'm not a big fan of Le Pen, but the fact that she's getting so popular really says that the mindset of the French is changing. Same thing with Wilders. You know, I think that 2013 in a lot of ways was a pretty positive year.
Well, how is the NPD making progress? Seems like they're being pounded on every side.
Well, that almost
they want to ban it.
They're making progress. I mean, they're gaining support, and they're being attacked for it. But I mean, this is like with the Golden Dawn, you have the extent of the attacks are correlated with the degree of support. I don't know about numbers of the NPD, okay. But I know I talked to a lot of people on the internet who are German and support them and say that, you know, it's going pretty well as far as
gathering
support.
That's good. You know, it's like with revisionism. You know, as you start being more successful, that's when they come down harder and harder on you. So that is a sign of that. Well, let me bring this up. You know, Andre, in spite of all the good work you do and how you are clearly, it seems to me that people would see that you're clearly doing this because you, for the cause and for the good society for white people and so on, that you're not doing it for any other reason. You have these enemies out there, and they might just be mostly, you know, some kooks or whatever, but they like to question your motives, and they like to question your past and bring all these things up, and they even like to question your race. So do you think that this is any kind of anything you want to address?
Well, I mean, I was very straightforward as soon as I started my Total Fascism website that, you know, I'd been involved in different things, and I lived in Asia, and yeah, I had an Asian girlfriend when I was living there. It's when I was 25 years old, and even younger. And so that's something that people just want to keep bringing that up, like it somehow discredits me. And I just don't, I don't understand how it really relates to anything. I mean, are you supposed to have been born understanding these things? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, my experiences in Asia, I credit with allowing me to understand things in the way I do now. So, I mean, yeah, that nobody wants to talk about anything I'm saying. And so instead they like to bring that up or bring up that I said some other things in the, you know, however many years ago or whatever, because I've always been really wanting to put my ideas out there. But you know, I've been straightforward with people, and if they don't like it, I don't know what they want from me.
What do you think these people who do this are just, you know, they're just trolls or just in the enemy camp? They're really not sincere in believing it. They're just trying to push this kind of thing. Do you think that? I mean, there are people, a lot of it, when it's this kind of ad hominem type stuff, you know, it's usually that.
Yeah, I mean, they could just be losers that, you know, have never really, really done much in their own lives and try and take it out on me. I tend to think it's some kind of a personal problem. And then sometimes it's, of course, Jews. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they want. If they want me to just stop doing what I'm doing, or if they want me to, I don't know. I don't have any idea what they want. I mean, they say they can expose me, and it's like, expose what? I said this on my own website.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started writing, I said this. So what is it? What does it mean? What are they getting at? I don't know.
Well, you're right. They use that word expose. I've had that used about me, too, recently. And, you know, there's nothing to expose. But there are things that people should explain when it's brought up. And it bothers me when it's something that's factual and real and these people get angry and say either I don't have to explain anything, or they explain using lies and crazy stories and then try to not have to talk about it anymore. Do you think that people in the movement, when something real comes up about their, you know, their, say, their fitness or their honesty about being a person who is cares about the white race, first and foremost, that you think that they should answer, you know, for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is necessary to address it and explain it, which is what, you know, what I've tried to just be straightforward with people. I mean, just say what about my life, who I am, whatever. I don't have anything, I don't have anything to hide. I don't really have anything I'm ashamed of either. So I like to be straightforward about it. But yeah, I think that when you're making yourself a public figure, you do have a responsibility to explain yourself.
Right. Okay. Well, I've got these little tidbits and things. I don't know how important they are. You know, we had two calls from that undisclosed number, which I didn't pick up on. And I'm just going to say one more time that we've got 15 minutes left. So if anybody wants to call in and say anything to Andrew, go ahead. It's 830-443-4911. Well, before I pick up on some of these little things that I might find here, is there anything you would like to say yet that I haven't brought up? I mean, we've got this big year ahead of us, and you're going to be quite busy, and you are going back to Europe. But so what, are there any things you wanted to tell people?
Well, I think people should keep their spirits up. I think things are going well. I mean, when you look at the kind of a mess we're in, And then the fact that we are making progress, I mean, you just look at the way race is being has been viewed over 2013 and this racial scandals that went on, and how people began to identify themselves along racial lines. I mean, white people began doing this in a lot of these big media things that have happened, whether it be the Trayvon thing where he wasn't even white, but I mean, white people felt attacked by the blacks. In that case, you had this, the white Santa Claus thing. And I mean, there's been a lot of instances where it appears that people are recognizing, and you had the backlash against the attempt to legalize all these millions of Mexicans. So I think the white guilt is beginning to fade in the general public. And in our little pro-white community, I think we're really making progress, getting more people involved, at least more people understanding the concepts. And I think we're solidifying a message. And I think, you know, this thing with Tila Tequila coming out.
I was just going to ask you about Tila Tequila. That was my next thing. You know, what did you have to say about her?
Oh, she's, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful what she's doing. You know, people complain about her past and that she's been this sex symbol, but I mean, she was so young when they brought her into that MTV thing that I think she was just sexually exploited by these Jews, like they do to so many young women when they suck them into this, just because they're legally allowed to consent for themselves, even though they're not, you know, fully emotionally and psychologically developed. So they take sexual advantage of them. I mean, the whole media, just look at Miley Cyrus. I mean, the whole media system, this Jewish entertainment system, is based on sexually exploiting young females.
And, but can you say how? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, can you say how old Tila Tequila is?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe she's not as young as she looks. I mean, she's such a sweet looking little thing, you know, and so delectable too. I mean, quite a beauty.
I think she's about my age. I don't know.
Oh, she's that old? Okay.
Yeah,
so
I think she's
not like 19 or 21 or something.
Because she's been around for 10 or so years. She got famous on MySpace.
Well, see, I never heard of her. I didn't know anything about her.
And then she got, I don't know, some different media attention. And then she got a TV show.
Okay, so she's kind of outgrown all that. And she's actually matured and come around to thinking.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, a lot of people want to attack her. I mean, she's Asian, so there's that. But what is that? That doesn't really have to do with anything.
No, isn't she half Asian? I believe
she's half Vietnamese and half French, which would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the French were there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm really happy about that. I think it's going very well, and she's reaching a lot of people. And you know,
and so has she given up her entertainment career to do this? Has she made enough money? Is she really able to save her money or
money? I don't think she cares. I mean, she's really just is going to say what she's going to say. She doesn't seem to care.
Okay.
She just seems to be kind of driven by
something.
Wanting to do what she feels is the right thing to do. So, I mean, that's been my impression of her. I'm happy with the way that's going. Oh, I want to thank the people that, if you don't mind, the people that helped me with my website. Of course, Clement Pulaski, Ben Garland, and right now I have a British man, he goes by Sven, who's been helping out with covering the British news, and he's been writing some articles, some real good articles.
See, I thought Sven was somebody else. I thought I had thought, oh, he must be so-and-so. But then I was wrong. So he's a British guy. That's good.
Yeah, I think he's English. But, yeah, he's helping out a lot mm-hmm. with the site. And he's written some real good articles that I've got them in the Our Writers at the right side there. And, you know, there's a lot of other people who have been submitting articles I've been posting, and some of them have been very good and very popular. So if anybody is interested in doing that, I'm taking submissions. I'm trying to work out some like international correspondence. I'm a pretty good editor, so when people are using English as a second language, I can usually fix it up a little bit. So that's something I got.
And I would hope that you would be really scrutinizing article submissions so that there's nothing odd getting in there, that, as we were talking about earlier in the program, you know, subversive, that is kind of hidden or covered up by things that sound good. Be careful, yeah. You know, who is allowed to post.
Yeah, there's a lot of that goes on. I don't know if people do it on, I mean, not with my site or submissions to my site, but I mean, I don't know if people do this on purpose or what, but you can find reading just these different blogs. You can find stuff that's kind of buried in the subtext between the lines that's, I think, is subversive in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely. I mean, if you announce I'll take submissions, then the people who are, you know, seeking to infiltrate their ideas and destroy us and so on would be probably thinking, well, I'll send something in, you know, under a false name. So you would want to check that out pretty good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think most of the people are genuine individuals. I've gotten some real good submissions and published them, and they've been well accepted.
Right. So, okay. Anything else then?
You got anything else?
Yeah. Well, let's see. I was just, I should probably, this probably doesn't fit in here very well, but,
Just go with it.
Well, speaking about fanatics, you know, in the movement and so on, I mean, I got this, email. No, it was a comment that I didn't publish, and I was going to talk about it on the air instead. It's from Ken Horst, who I published a couple of his, and then he got so, I thought, a little bit abusive, and I stopped. But he wrote to me. Well, because I had said on a radio show that I hated lies and liars, and he said, if you hate lies, liars, Carolyn, then you must hate David Duke, who lies about 9/11 and says Arabs did it. Does he say that?
It's not clear.
And then he says, hate Jared Taylor, who lies and says Jews are good white people.
He does say that, yeah.
Yeah. And then he says, hate Hitler for lying to Germans about Eva Braun, 40-year-old dating a 17-year-old. And so I thought, I looked that up. Well, there was 23 years separation between them. But
yeah.
She did not start seeing him until 2 years after they first met. They were introduced because she was working for this photographer who was his private photographer, you know, Hoffman. And, he would see her when he went into the Hoffman's shop there, business and so on. And, she had this big, big crush on him. Well, I guess he waited 2 years, but when she was 19, he thought he could ask her out. But, you know, he's accusing Hitler of this. Then he says more things about this. He says, like,
well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, with Hitler's,
Well, I personally don't either. I don't either. I mean, it's not the most common. It's, you wouldn't want everybody to be doing it, but he wasn't the usual kind of man, and so he was dating women. I don't know if you call it dating, but yeah, he took women to functions and so on. He saw women, and he just liked this young woman, and she liked him a whole lot. And she decided at some point that she wanted to be with him. And so that finally, you know, that makes an impression. I always say, women choose the man they want. That's one of the things
that's what sociologists say also.
Prerogative, you know, that if a woman doesn't want a man, forget it. You know, he's not going to get her unless you live in some kind of one of those societies where you take slaves.
Muslim country.
Yeah. And so, and when a woman really wants a man, in this case, almost a girl wanted this man, it's hard to resist that. Men are very much impressed by that, you know, that you like them so much, you know, and it turned out that she did. And she always did, and she stayed, she never wanted anybody but him. And they did have a good relationship, very good. So it was the right thing. You know, you can't judge everything according to these rules. Anyway, then he says,
It was pretty normal at the time to have an age gap, so it's not.
Well, it wasn't. There are a whole lot of Germans just married people their own age or, you know, difference. That's always the majority, but there's always been some of these other cases. You know, I might as well just stick with this subject till the show's over because it's almost over. I had a relationship once with a fellow who was 18 years younger than me. And, you know, it was the best relationship I ever had in my life. And I thought though that it wouldn't age well, you know, that wouldn't work out well. And I finally broke it off, but I shouldn't have because I know now that it would have continued to be all right. But I didn't know how, I just assumed I'd get old and ugly or something. And, he would be, you know, stuck with me or something like that. But, you know, these things, you have to go with your heart and your feelings. That's what I think. And I didn't always do that because I was trying to figure out how it was going to turn out or something, you know, try to think it through.
Think it too much.
Yeah, think it too much. Well, I certainly, for 2014, Andre, I hope I would wish that you would find the perfect woman for you and be able to we'd have a wedding and accomplish that and then, you know, have that taken care of so you can move on with what else you're...
Yeah, move on with my life. Yeah,
I would wish that for you.
Well, thank you. I wish that as well.
So people who are out there listening, let's hope there's some good people listening out there. Well, we've got still a minute. Okay. Well, after that, that's kind of hard to beat. There we got 60 seconds, Andre. We didn't get any callers, so I guess, but we had a very good number of listeners. So people are interested and they've been listening. But they didn't want to break in and call.
It went pretty well, just the two of us.
Yeah.
Callers sometimes break things up and mess everything up.
Yeah. Well, if they don't really have anything that fits in, if they're just asking something weird, it takes you away.
No, I think it can make the conversation interesting sometimes, progresses it. But.
Well, I want to wish you... continuing good fortune, and also, you know, I'm a big follower of Daily Stormer, and I think it's been very important, and it's certainly brought things home to me in a way that nothing ever did. So let's just hope that we have a real good year this new year. That's what I'm hoping for myself. I'm pretty puffed up about it. So thank you, Andrew. And
thank you, Carolyn.
Okay, and good day, everybody. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.